Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In this segment, I want to just play for you a couple of clips. So you know the story. Brian Laundrie and Gabby Petito are in a relationship. They're sort of a common law couple. She's traveling the country with him. She's posting videos. She wants to get her blog and her video thing up and running. People follow her, I guess. But as she's traveling across the country, the two of them are outside their vehicle. Maybe we should start, Elif, with the 911 dispatch call. So the two of them are outside the vehicle. Somebody drives by, and they see an altercation between Gabby and Brian. This is that phone call in part.
What were they doing?
We drove by, and the gentleman was slapping the girl.
He was slapping her?
Yes, and then we stopped. They ran up and down the sidewalk. He proceeded to hit her, hopped in the car, and they drove off.
So that person's called 911, reporting what they say is watching Brian slap and hit Gabby. That person, in fact, described the vehicle and got the license plate. Later, the police find that vehicle on the road, and then they notice that he actually runs the vehicle up onto the curb and then back onto the street. That's when the cops pull him over. The police officer has pulled over Brian and Gabby, and this is the first conversation they have with them.
Do you want to place your vehicle in the park and go ahead and turn it off for me? No, park?
Oh, it isn't parked yet.
Okay, turn off your engine. Go ahead and set your keys on the dash for me, all right? What's your guys' names?
Gabby.
I'm Brian.
Gabby, Brian, okay. What's going on? How come you're crying?
The officer, I just thought when I watched this the first time, and the first time I saw this, I had not heard the 911 call, but I just thought the officer has no presumption here, despite what the 911 call said. I think he's treating everybody with civility. He's being fair. I don't know that he needs to de-escalate, but he certainly isn't escalating the situation. He's just asking some basic questions of the two. Remember, he doesn't know what he's getting into, and he doesn't know the future. So here's cut two. Gabby is crying.
I'm just crying. We've just been fighting this morning. Some personal issues.
It was a long day. We were camping yesterday, and camping got supplies and stuff. I'm sorry I hit the bump there.
I was distracting him from driving. I'm sorry.
Can I get you to step out of the vehicle for me, ma'am?
Yeah.
Just hang tight right there.
Both of them are very cooperative. He said we were camping. She says we were just having some issues. Sometimes couples fight. She's apologizing a lot in the video. Okay, cut three. The officer has removed her from the car.
Do you mind if I take your keys and just put them on your hood?
You got it, buddy. I'm so
Thank
sorry.
Thank you. Oh, no, you're fine. Why don't you come over here? You want to tell me what's going
on? Yeah, I don't know. It's just some days I have really bad OCD. And
okay.
I was just cleaning and straightening up the back of the van before, and I was apologizing to him and saying, I'm sorry that I'm so mean, because sometimes I have OCD and sometimes I can get really frustrated. Not like.
So she goes on at some length, and she's crying, and I don't know how much sense it makes to the officer at the time. She says, I was cleaning. I have OCD. He thought I was mad, or I was acting mad. I'm sorry. She's just kind of, you know, pouring out a little bit of a word salad and some tears, and she's putting all of this on herself through her tears. Okay, we're on cut five now, right? Cut four. So Gabby is distressed.
You've been fighting all morning, and you wouldn't let me in the car before. And
why wouldn't he let you in the car? Because you of your OCD?
Told me I need to calm down. Yeah. But I'm perfectly calm. I'm calm all the time. And he really stresses me out. And this is a rough morning.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't I sit you down in the back seat of my car? You're not in any trouble, okay? I'm not going to be putting handcuffs on you. You obviously don't have any weapons. I'm going to get you into the air conditioning, let you take a breath, relax a little bit.
He's just trying to calm her down. Again, she's saying it was on me. he's asked her a few questions about that. So he's now going to put her in the squad car with the air conditioning. They eventually get her some water. And then they talk to Brian.
She just gets worked up sometimes, and I try and really distance myself from her. So, like, I lock the car and I walk away from her.
You want to tell me about those scratches on your face?
She had herself on her hand. That's why I was pushing her away.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard all of that, but the officer said, can you tell me about those scratches on your face? He said, well, she had her cell phone in her hand. I was pushing her away. Remember, previously he said that he locked himself in the vehicle and kept her on the outside so that the two of them would have some sort of physical distance from each other. He said, you need to calm down. But evidently he's also saying that at some point when they were in close contact, she, with her phone in her hand, scratched his face. The officer asked Brian if he's on meds because he seems to be kind of hyperactive.
You don't take any medications or anything like that? Are you normally this kind of like hyper?
Do I see my heart rate up? Whenever the lights flash on, it gets your heart rate up.
Trust me, it does me too, and I'm the one. It gets me going a little bit.
You can say, hey, buddy, whenever somebody wants that.
So, okay.
So the officer is sharing almost a joke. He says, you think your heart starts to race when our lights come on. Ours does too. And then Brian laughingly says, yeah, you don't kind of know what's coming up on here, et cetera, et cetera. So it seems kind of collegial. You know, I imagined at the time that maybe the method from the police officer is not to judge and not to point fingers, but to sort of put them in a relaxed enough position that they'll tell them the truth and tell them what's going on here. And in the back of their minds, there must be the question, how much danger is this woman in? Remember, this is all predicated on somebody saying that they saw him hit her, slap her, and punch her. The vehicle takes off. The officers pull him over, but they notice that the scratch is on his face. And in fact, that the two of them say that she hit him. When the party lights go on the squad car, on the state trooper's vehicle, she says, I sort of punched him in the arm like, oh, you big dummy, look what you got us into here. And maybe she swung at him previously as well. So this is the officer now. And there's a few police officers on the scene now. And one of them is explaining to Brian, this is fascinating to me, that since, and I don't know if this officer is aware of the 911 call, but since the two of them admit that she swung at him and he has a scratch on his face, in fact, he may be the one who is the victim of domestic violence here. Think about this.
One of the things that the state legislature doesn't give us discretion on is charges when it comes to domestic assault. And it sounds like you guys are living together, so you meet the statute for domestic partners. And you do have injury, and both an independent witness, probably the next one we're going to talk to as well, which we haven't talked to yet, but one of the ones we did talk to, and your own companion have made it clear that she was the primary aggressor. She was striking you and you just received injuries. You have the ability to strike her. She has not the ability to strike her. The witness did not see you strike her. So at this point, you're the victim of a domestic assault. And even if you didn't want to pursue this, you don't have a choice.
Okay, I'll end it there. So just to recap some of the things that we were able to hear in the office, I hope you heard it on the radio, was he said, you're a domestic couple. He said, one thing that the state statute doesn't give us is discretion. He said, you're a domestic couple, you sustained injury, the scratch on your face. It's sort of like out of the officer's hands, however small or trivial this appears to be. We have an independent witness, although the witness describes her as the victim, not him, but he says, we have a witness, you have injury, you're domestic. She was the primary aggressor. You sustained injuries, therefore she's in trouble, you're not, and we have to do something about it. Eventually, the resolution is, I mean, they were talking about, do you want to arrest her? And he kind of chuckles like, wow, my good fortune. Who knew? Eventually, the officers talk to her and they say, okay, we're going to give you the keys to the van. You need to go somewhere and stay away from him tonight. We're going to put him up in a hotel. And the two of you are going to be separated for 24 hours. You need to cool off. Don't text each other. Have no contact with each other. Eventually, they would get back together, presumably the next day. But that's the resolution to it. I don't think either of them went to jail. I don't believe she did. They gave her the keys to the van and said, go away. We're going to give him a hotel, and then the two of you can reunite tomorrow. That's how that ended. the police had no way of knowing what was going to happen next. And I was just impressed with how difficult it is for them to know what really has happened here. And in a way, I was impressed with the sort of composure that the police seemed to demonstrate, even though you could say they got it completely wrong. Okay, so in just a minute, I want to talk to Theo Darden. He is a professor of criminal justice at the College of DuPage. 17 years, he himself was a police officer in scenes like this. So how did you read that video, Professor? In a minute. Theo Darden is a criminal justice professor at the College of DuPage. 17 years, he was a police officer. He was a sergeant for a while. But now he's Dr. Darden, I believe. Theo, welcome to WGN. How are you?
I'm fine, John. Thanks for having me.
So talk about that video. You and I have both watched it. I walked our audience through it. What jumps out at you at that police interaction with Brian and Gabby?
First, I'd like to say my thoughts go out to the Petito family about their loss. But to look at that video, I was quite concerned about a number of things involving the investigation.
Like what?
The first thing that I was concerned about is when the officer approached the vehicle swerved, he observed that it hits the curb.
Yeah.
He pulls the vehicle over. He had trying to be, pull it over for a little while. And he approached the vehicle and looked inside, and it almost became it was nonchalant the way that he approached it. He did not approach it with, he didn't think he was in any danger. There was nothing, that it appeared to give him a sense of urgency. And then he pulls her out of the car, and she's clearly distraught. Gabby is clearly distraught. She's crying. She's stating that she's apologizing for what happened. And the officer begins to question her. And as it goes on, it's clear that something has occurred domestically. There's been some type of physical incident. She even admits to punching him and grabbing him. And so the officer probably should have began to start to think about, okay, what type of domestic situation do we have here? And start to take a little more serious approach to what this outcome was going to be.
That's an interesting, isn't it funny? Because I framed it so differently. I was sort of patting them on the back saying, how could they know? But another way to put it was, a witness said he punched her and slapped her, that they were doing 45 and a 15 or 20. It was a long time before the vehicle stopped, although they had their cherries on. And then they see the car run up onto the curve and then back. So why doesn't the police officer take this a little more seriously? And so you describe that as nonchalance. You would have wished that they had maybe assumed that there's more danger for Gabby here than they were acting.
That approach that I would have taken with all of those things that you just mentioned, John, that would have sent off, all types of antennas in my head saying, there's something going on here and I need to figure this out. Something's not right. As they continue and other officers show up on the scene, there appears to be another jurisdiction.
Yes.
And what I mean, so I think what you have here is some U.S. Parks Police
right.
who initiated the traffic stop, and they are probably not as familiar with domestic cases and the handling of domestic cases as the city officer is. And so the city officer begins to explain, if you watched the video, if others watched the video, about domestic violence laws and about mandatory arrest and what needs to take place. As they're investigating, because of the information that they're getting from Gabby and then eventually the other suspect, it sounds like Gabby is the primary aggressor, and they begin to start to talk about taking her, because of the mandatory arrest laws. And so at that point, from the information that I'm getting, I'm not quite sure if they had the 911 call. If they did have that 911 call, they at least look at both of them as primary aggressors, at the very least.
I would ask, in just a minute, what could they have done? Assume that they had the feeling that you wish they had about this. I wonder what options they had. Also, Producer Aleph, what were you thinking?
Well, why didn't the first Two questions. Why didn't they ask her about him hitting her? And the second question is, why would he give one story of her grabbing the steering wheel and then she tell the police officers that she actually hit him on the arm, causing the car to bump into the curb, and then they still accuse her of being the aggressor?
Yeah, they somebody's lying about why the car hit the curb. And that's an interesting point, Theo. At no point did we see them ask about the altercation that initiated this stop, him punching her on the side of the street in town.
Yeah, they never asked that. And that's my, if they had that information, that should have been, you know, the first thing that they asked her about. But they never asked her about that. In fact, when they asked her, you know, did he hit you? She kind of like said, well, he grabbed me in my face.
Yeah.
And then she kind of like began to reconstruct that story and then come back to he grabbed me, you know, in my face, which should have sent, again, those antennas off and those officers just said, you know, there's more here. The way that, you know, she's shaking. And then they begin to point out how many scratches that he actually had. He had scratches on both sides of his face. He had scratches on his arm. And initially he only said, oh, it was her phone. She had keys in her hand. And so it's like something's not adding up here. Something's not adding up.
Could they have if this happens in Illinois, I don't know what different jurisdictions are, but I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Throw him in jail and charge him with what? And then he gets out the next day anyway. All of this notwithstanding, I wonder how much leverage the officers had in this scene.
Well, the officers had the leverage of the law that they could have used. Now, it's not up to the officers to decide what happens after they use the leverage that they have. It's just up for them to decide the leverage that they do have. And the arrest usually occurs. The reason for mandatory arrest is to avoid exactly what eventually happened to Gabby, to avoid a death of an individual, to avoid further injury. And so the mandatory arrest laws in most states requires that the primary aggressor is arrested. If you cannot determine who the primary aggressor is, take them both in, write your report, and allow the prosecutor's office, you know, to discern what they're going to do next. But there was something very interesting, John, towards the end of that video. And it was the how they came to the conclusion that they were not going to make an arrest. And if you listen carefully to that video, the city officer begins to state, he says this, and I'll try to paraphrase him. He says, what would you like to do here?
Yeah.
If you decide not to make an arrest, then separate them. And then he says, what is it to you? You did your job. You know, if she goes back to him, then it's on her, basically. That's what he says.
Let's do
this. That's what he says. Let's on the camera.
I'm out of time today, Theo. We're going to follow this story, of course. Let me bounce a few more questions off you down the road. But now that you mention it, again, you know, I don't want to be overly critical because the officers cannot have known what was going to happen. I'll bet they bump into this kind of scene all the time. It doesn't end with murder, which is what apparently has happened. And yet your analysis is one I didn't anticipate. So I'll call you down the road, Theo. But thank you for your time today.
Sure. You're welcome.
He's a criminal justice professor at the College of DuPage.